From Sylvain Labs, welcome to Critical Nonsense. On our show, we dig deep into cultural ephemera and pose questions to each other to inspire interesting conversations. This is Critical Nonsense. This week, Joey asks Aaron about our inner hackers, and Aaron asks Joey about the missing link between video games and the movies made about them.
Bloogle bloogle.
Is that what a Joey sounds like?
Oh, hi. This is what a Joey sounds like.
Barbin parbin. That's what an Aaron sounds like.
And this is what a paleo strategist, Jess Vander, sounds like.
Hi, this is Jess.
Ain't got none of the time for shenanigans today. None of it.
She's not supporting any of our made up sounds prior to recording.
No, there will be
Flora Blurm.
Oh, again, Flora Blurm.
No, guys.
Okay. Just really quickly, Flora Dern. Jurassic Park, flora, fauna, it could work. Okay.
I'm sorry. It works.
Yes.
Real quick housekeeping.
Yeah.
If you have ideas, topics, questions, email us.
Please do.
Jess, what's our email?
CriticalNonsense@sylvainlabs.com.
Ooh.
We've gotten some comments on the socials, things like that. But if you have questions or corrections department.
Yeah. That department loves letters.
Let's get to it.
Yeah.
I have some things I want to discuss.
I want you to break your mind open like a walnut, acorn, or other sort of tree fruit.
Breaking is appropriate for this conversation.
Bad.
So there was a fun article that came out this week, and then subsequent articles, just everyone picking up the same story. But it was around teenagers breaking, in quotes, Google Docs.
Really thought you were going to see teenagers and mutants and Ninja Turtles. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I first saw it in a Quartz article. I don't know if they were the first one to pick it up or not, but if I'm picking Quartz or Fortune, I'm assuming Quartz had the more interesting first get. But it was talking about how teenagers now are using Google Docs because they're being used in an actual educational context, right? Instead of working on sheets of scrap paper that are like thin and see-through and gray and you have to fold into squares to do your math homework. They're using Google Docs, but they're chatting with each other in all kinds of different ways. Like, they're actually using Google Docs as a method of passing notes, or, you know, some of the instances that they talked about in the article were like, if they're in a public doc in a classroom, they're typing in comments to each other and just having a chat in comments. And then as soon as a teacher comes by or walks near them, they just resolve the comment. Or there's the group chat function that doesn't pop up automatically in Google Docs, and they're just having long, elaborate conversations. Like, there's these tweets or things like people like tweeting about flirting in Google Docs in class and stuff like that, which sounds like the driest version of flirting that you have. You considered indenting?
I'm just going to the suggest mode, just everything but green.
Yeah, and there are lots of other like interesting examples where they're just like going to homeroom, creating a Google Doc, talking to their friend, and then deleting it afterwards. But it made me think about what do the rules that we break say about us as people?
Ooh, Barracuda.
See, we needed more.
Gosh, we miss you, Aaron.
I miss y'all too.
80s references in segues.
In the segues. I love that question. So I'm I tend to be a very rule follow-y person. And when I think about the rules that I would break, it would take so much conviction and passion to break certain rules that it would be such a clear indicator of my current state and what I truly value above all else.
Because
I
think, not even like jaywalk.
I do jaywalk, but every time I do it in New York, I'm still like, I literally, this happened yesterday. I jaywalked with a police officer right behind me, and I was like, oh my God, she's gonna stop me and arrest me right now. It's gonna happen.
I'm going to jail.
But I do, and I think it's interesting that there are rules in different contexts. There are social rules of just, you know, how to converse with people and how to behave, those unwritten rules. And then there are more legislative, strict, you know, rules with, you know, punitive action attached to them, mm-hmm. as far as like jail time and fines and things like that. But yeah, I mean, either one of those rules, if I break them, you're going to know what I really, really value. And I love this idea that you can judge someone's character by what rules they choose to break.
Yeah, I mean, it's in, like there's this is sort of like a very classic example, and it's like a known thing, right, where people, young kids are like so driven, especially like in middle and high school, by socialization. Like socializing and forming social groups is like the crux of everything. That's why, like, if you get punished as a kid and you're not allowed to like hang out with your friends or use your phone or whatever it is literally like the entire world is crumbling around mm-hmm. you and you're trapped in a singularity of yourself.
that's your memoir. No, yeah. That's accurate.
And so like this is telling, right, like they're breaking rules around not being able to socialize in certain contexts, but it starts to extend. Like for myself, I started thinking about it and like, what are the rules I break? And the one of like the very obvious ones is when I'm riding my bike to and from work every day, I blast red lights all the time. And I'm not doing it just like going headlong into a light without looking, but
good.
But my time is so valuable to me, and waiting is something that I hate. Mm-hmm. I am an impatient person. And so like that rule for me is just like, I value my time so much. I will definitely break this rule. But in like other contexts around social things, like if it's taking something away from someone else, like I won't break it. And so it says something about me, but then you start looking at like, other groups of people, like what are the rules that Congress breaks, or mm-hmm. what are the rules that certain industries break, and what does it say about them, right? Like it tells you, you know, is a group of people motivated by money or status or all these other things. And it like it's weird, it was a weird feeling where this was unlocked by teenagers breaking Google Docs. But
it says a lot, though, about the way that we treat social, like that specifically says a lot about the way that we treat socialization and young people, and the way that we segment different different times of day for different tasks. It's like you must be in learning mode at this point. And then at recess time or whatever, you can then speak to other people that are sitting next to you. And those sorts of blocks are so funny when we think about the way that work is changing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, after school, you like as you graduate and you get into the workforce, that line doesn't exist. And you actually have to blur it if you're going to create connections with your colleagues and connect with clients that you have. Like you have to be able to, you know, comment in Google Docs, essentially. That's yeah. actually a necessary skill.
Yeah, I mean, it is, right? Like no one likes not being able to socialize during school. It's not like a model where everyone's like, school was wonderful and I want to continue that for the rest of my life. Jess is like,
yeah. I'm just like, A, that's what academia is.
Yes.
B, I love school. Mm-hmm. And also I'm also a rule following person. So maybe this just says something about me.
I also did like school, but it took me a long time to like it. So in basically through high school, I was like, school, I just want to get to play practice because yeah. that's where, like, you know, you're going to be a theater kid. That's what you look forward to all day, all year round anyway.
Ooh, but Barracuda.
Deep in my soul. But the big thing was I chose to go to school where I went to because it was basically choose your own adventure as far as academia was concerned. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all grades were pass or fail. Like, that's it. Or ABC, no credit. Those are the only ways. There's no core curriculum. So you create the educational path that you want. And I remember being 17 years old, getting the course packet, first being overwhelmed for about a month. And then after shopping a bunch of classes, just my mind was blown because it was like, oh, I can put myself in situations to learn about stuff that I want to learn about. And then I can like spend the next 4 years doing that. Blew my mind to realize that education was much more valuable mm-hmm. when I felt that I was in charge of my path, as opposed to following things that were set out ahead of me.
I think there that what you're talking about is bringing up this idea that like school and even just adolescence in general is the slow tapering of structure and the opening of maybe you know, maybe it's not even just breaking a rule here, but it's like but maybe you don't do the thing I tell you and you do a different thing. And that's increasingly okay as time goes on.
Well, true. I mean, Montessori schools, which I'm not an expert on by any means. I've like read a little bit about, but the idea is that it is unstructured and that you figure it out from a much earlier age than getting into college, where then you're finally figuring it out on your own.
As a Montessori school kid, I would say yes.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I think like there at some point there was like a boom of articles about like all of these, you know, entrepreneur tech giants went to Montessori schools. Like, what can we learn about that? And it was the idea of like, make your own rules and then follow them. And you know, don't be beholden to some pre-existing structure around how you do things. The other thing I wanted to talk about in the Google Docs thing is from a product development perspective, I find it really interesting where people are using things that were not intended for that purpose to solve a new need. Like, I find it super interesting from that perspective of like, you can build something and be like, this is a Word document device that is meant to write proposals and essays and whatever else you do in Google Docs. It says something about me that about my first thing was proposals. But that now it's being used for something entirely different. It like reminds me of when Twitter first started, that people were starting to create these mechanisms of like referencing each other with like the at symbols or the hashtags, but they weren't linked or part of the system at the time. And it was like really good product development practice where they were just like, oh, people are doing this, let's integrate it to the system. And it makes me think about like what are people doing with other things that are not the intended purpose but become like a core purpose for some group of people.
I mean, that's how a lot of things were invented, right? You know, the military made a thing that then became phones, you know, or like insert all other consumer inventions here.
I mean, Viagra was, help me out, Viagra heart was disease. Heart disease, like blood pressure originally.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right.
And then, well, then blue became green. It got really weird for pilots. But yes, it's a whole other story. We'll link to stuff in the doobly-doo about that. But yeah, there are plenty of things that once you get it out in the real world, people hack it. People realize that there's a different solution. And then it's up to product developers to pay attention to how to take advantage of that.
Yeah, but it fits with this idea of rules too, which I'm just making a connection now, which is, it fits with the idea of rules too, of like how structured are you developing your product to inhibit rule breaking or to like quell rule breaking, or are you enabling it and feeding it? Like there are developers who find people breaking rules in their product and they're like, quash it, that's not the intended use of this thing. And other ones are just like, oh cool, that's neat, like lean into it or start to support those other things. You know, like allowing teens to flirt in Google Docs, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's also like there's the joy of the unintended purpose as well. Like, not just in the discovery of it, but in the like, you need Google Docs to look like a word processor in order to hide it from your teachers to then have those conversations. And yet as soon as it basically becomes an online messaging platform, it ends up as one of the many Google messaging platforms that needs to not exist.
Yeah.
Too many of them. But like, it ends up becoming something else that looks like something else that serves that sole purpose and perhaps then doesn't serve the purpose that, or doesn't meet the need that it actually was meeting in the original tool, in the original product.
Yeah, it's interesting because looking at how people are breaking rules, I'm like suddenly feeling like it's a really inspiring way to analyze things, because every system has an exploit, right? Like, we continue to build, like, the reason why our tax structure is so Byzantine is because it's like someone exploited the system. So add another rule, add another rule, add another rule, add another rule. And all of a sudden it becomes this, you know, like stack of phone books that is like our tax code. And I was talking, I don't know if it was talking to you, Jess, or someone else, but talking about the cell phone spamming, like mobile spamming and call spamming and all of these things. And someone was like, oh, well, I'm just going to, you know, it's getting to the point where maybe I just don't need a phone number or something like that. And I was like, if people just start getting rid of their phones, then the people who are doing the spamming are going to just go to find another way to spam you, right? Yeah. Like before spam phone calls in this current like insane wave of, you know, it's predicted that this year 50% of mobile phone calls will be spam.
Sounds right.
Last year was 30. The year before that was 4%. So we are really going through this massive uptick. But before that, it was like email spamming. And before that, it was direct mail spamming. And like, yeah. People are going to find a new exploit. And so creating looser structured systems where you're allowing people to break rules and create new things might actually just be the better way to run a system versus like rules are so stiff and rigid, right? Like typically it's like a binary thing. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of get locked into something.
My only thought is that philosophically, someone has to lay down a rule and enforce it in order for it to be broken.
Yeah.
Like in order for someone to test what could be like done beyond it, because otherwise it's just an open sandbox of like, chaos and what's the word that starts with an A?
Anarchy.
Thank you. Oh, my brain was full of the anarchy right now. And so you do need you need somebody both to establish what the rules are, but then there has to be stakes involved for those lines to matter mm-hmm. at all. And those sorts of guardrails spark creativity, which can spark then the opportunity to break them.
We've established that we love breaking rules, but what? I guess what to the original question does that say about who we are and what kinds of people are more likely to be the ones who are cool with being the phone spammers, right? Like what kind of a person is that?
True.
Yeah. I mean, I think the question is like, what is someone getting out of being a phone spammer or what is someone getting out of any rule break? Right. Cause I think you can look at it on an individual level, right? Like the rules I break are around maximizing my time apparently, which mm-hmm. I didn't realize until coming into this conversation, but it sort of checks out. And so like my time is clearly something I value, but like money isn't something I value where I'm going to start breaking rules around that. Like it's not like a key mm-hmm. driver or motivation for me, but then you can kind of look at what is an individual, like what do you break? Just you break the rule of making more rules when someone says you can't. You're just like, absolutely not. I will add more rules to this process.
Yes. This makes me happy. I enjoy this part.
But like, you know, like when you look at the financial crash, right? Like what were the rules that Wall Street was breaking as part of that system and what was motivating them? And fundamentally it was greed and, you know, hubris and all of these different things. But like in, you know, I'm trying to think of like another, like what are the rules that doctors are breaking right now? Which I think we're actually in sort of a moment where doctors are starting to revolt against the system a little bit because it's making their life unbearable. Mm-hmm. I think I saw a video that was being shared around and Ben sent it to a group of us. There was this doctor, there's like the medical system is failing doctors and we're hearing about this concept of burnout, but it's not burnout, it's moral injury. And he was citing other things. And the reason like doctors are trained to help people and they take the Hippocratic Oath and all of these things, they drive themselves their entire life to go into this field in order, and other medical professionals as well, but to go into this field to help and care for people. And they're actually serving financial things and having to serve their family as well as patients and not getting to do with patients what they set out to do. And so it's creating this moral injury. And now they're starting to revolt against a system of, you know, not billing things in the same way because people aren't allowed to get care or like sliding things under the rug. Like they're breaking rules in order to do a better job of caring for people.
Oh, I wonder how... I think the most interesting conversations around this topic are around the subjects that have the most ethical implications.
Mm. Yeah.
Right. Like the reason that's so interesting is because what drives doctors or their decision making is when their, you know, their morals are at play.
Yeah.
Which is why when you say moral injury, that makes a lot of sense, both as sort of the play on words for doctors, but even when we think about like political decision making, or we, you know, there are all these this rule breaking thing becomes a lot more dire and a lot more, I think it says even more about you when it has when it's influenced by, you know, what drives your values.
And you get this conflict then between your personal agency that you get out of any rule break and then the impact that it has on others.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps the agency that those folks lose as a result of your own rule breaking. And yep. That conflict and like the math of like who's more important, me or other people, and how big is the damage that could be done. I totally agree that that math or that mental calculus is like, that's yep. what we say.
Yeah, I love this place that we've landed of breaking rules for good.
Oh, it's a feather bed of positivity. Is that
you? Can you make the sound of that?
Bed? I was just like,
that's falling into the feather bed.
That's beautiful.
Rainbow. Bonjour, mon friends. Why am I so weird? That's the question today.
Je suis la jeune fille.
Un, deux, trois. I can barely get it out. Muzzy, look it up, guys. You know, I woke up this morning. I woke up this morning at 2:30, bolt upright for no good reason. My body is in revolt maybe because of springtime, antihistamines, who knows?
Is Mercury in retrograde?
It feels like it. So I break open my phone, check out the Reddit, see what the convos are, what convos are popping.
What are the kids talking about?
Chit-chatting in their Google Chats. And there's been a lot of talk over the past year about Netflix greenlighting The Witcher as a series.
Really?
Absolutely. So The Witcher is a PlayStation video game. It's an RPG. And
what's that, Aaron?
Ooh, good point. Role-playing game, action role-playing game. So it's a lot of running around a medieval-like society, hacking and slashing monsters on a quest with magic and witchcraft. That's basically what this game is all about. And it's fantastic. It had two expansions. It's like 80 hours of gameplay. It is its own world that you can get into. And
80 hours, that's so much.
It's so much time.
It's a commitment.
Yeah. And so Henry Cavill, one of the last Supermen, because DC can't make that franchise work, is slated to be The Witcher in this series. And it just got delayed. To be honest, I'm really, really excited because I have yet to see a really good video game to movie adaptation. And that's really the crux of my 3 a.m. fever dream while awake is... Why are video game to movie adaptations so bad?
Has there been a good one? I'm going through, has there been one that was legitimately good? Because it's interesting because video games are increasingly cinematic,
mm-hmm.
right? Like they're increasingly doing longer cutscenes where it is effectively a movie. Like there are people who will take like all of the cutscenes from a video game and put them, you know, like in an 80-hour game, you might have an hour and a half of cutscenes.
Kingdom Hearts 3, check it out on YouTube.
Yeah, you can go on YouTube and watch the sort of high-level story arc of a game by just watching the sequence of cutscenes. I remember like the first time I heard about this was like Final Fantasy VII, maybe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you would think in theory that they would translate well, but the fact that you brought up 80 hours of gameplay
mm-hmm.
is part of what I'm thinking about because it, right, like in a book, it's in your head. Mm-hmm. So you read the Harry Potter series, and even if, you know, like Jess, maybe you can chime in here. Were you upset at any of the renditions of Harry Potter after reading the books and seeing the movies of like, they missed out Professor Umbridge's banana? That was an important.
Many bananas.
I, you know, I, it's funny you choose Harry Potter specifically because in terms of book to movie adaptations, I think many would argue it's one of the ones done best. Mm. There are plenty of movies that bastardize a lot of the
bastards,
a lot of the original form, whatever it be, book or otherwise. And I think part of that too was, maybe it was that the way J.K. Rowling wrote them catered itself well to a movie translation. I mean, to me, it brings up the question of some things that are just not designed for a different format than the one it was created in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like that idea of it being something you're watching, like you're literally watching a movie when you're watching Witcher that you get to play. And so you've already seen it. And it's in a visual medium. Versus a book is in a written form and you have to imagine it. So there maybe is less bastardization?
Maybe so. I mean, I think there's the one point about the length of the gameplay and therefore the amount of storytelling that you can do now.
Yeah.
Like, how are you going to boil down 80 hours? And granted, The Witcher is going to be a series, but how do you boil 80 hours of gameplay and storytelling down to, like, a movie, like two hours?
Yeah, this brings up to the series of unfortunate events, which
Lemony Snicket.
Yeah, Lemony Snicket. Which, if you haven't seen it,
uvula.
Before, I guess it's now in the time where we can, instead of making movies, we can just have long form television. Which maybe it's not necessarily a new thing, but it's a new thing to 2018, 2019.
It's the golden age,
the volume of it, I think, is new.
Right. And and that sort of breaking the rule of how long a television show should be, or, you know, it's sort of like in between TV and movie length in order to tell more story. Mm-hmm. Right. So that particular series was like, okay, there's way too much here. How do we get all the books in and tell that in detail? Well, we should just make the show longer.
Yeah.
Right. Like, is there a way that they could make Witcher better?
True.
By breaking a rule, say, about movies?
Yeah. I mean, Netflix has done this really. Netflix and HBO have both done this for book adaptations really well. Because Game of Thrones, an episode can be anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and a half if the rumors about season 8 are true.
You know, your mentions are going to blow up off that because that is a polarizing subject. Someone's like, they lost me at book 5.
And to be honest, I was one of those people. So let's chat, friends. This is nonsense at sylvanlabs.com.
Nope, critical nonsense.
Oh, God, I'm bad at everything. So when it comes to the medium itself, I think that there's also just the interactivity. Like, so with a video game, like, the benefit is that is the agency that you have not only over the narrative, but over the actual progression and pacing and everything of the story. Like, speaking of cinematic video games, The Last of Us is the best movie I've ever played. And I talk about that all the time. It's like the drama, the actual emotional impact of both the actual cutscenes that are within it, but the scenes that are baked into the gameplay itself.
Mm-hmm.
It is a film, a very, very long and nuanced and well-performed film that I am intrinsically a part of. And there are aspects of the gameplay that make that even more dramatic that you can't do on film.
What was that show/movie where someone allowed you to, like, choose your ending? Or
Bandersnatch.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
So I wonder, is it just that movies are realizing right now, wait, we are not, like, we wish we were video games, but we aren't?
Yeah. I mean, I believe that. But Joseph Gordon-Levitt, by the way, I give him tons of props because his production company years ago tried to create a film that was a choose your own adventure in theaters. And he was working on a concept to actually work with Cinemark or one of the major AMC theater chains to develop a film that you would move from space to space, but they just wouldn't do it. It was too complicated, too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix has the ability to do that online. And they created what I think is an inherent limitation of the film spectacle. Not only is it not interactive, like you're not able to control the pacing or control the story in any way, it's also ironically isolating. It's that weird feeling of like you're alone in the movie theater watching the movie,
mm-hmm.
but then there are only the cues from people around you, but you're not talking to them at all.
Yeah.
And video games, especially most of the ones that are adapted into films, are actually about interacting with someone else, The Witcher aside.
Yeah.
So like Super Mario Brothers, Mortal Kombat, Double Dragon, what's another fighting game that was one? Raul Julia, Kylie Minogue. Street Fighter.
Yeah, it was Street Fighter. Yeah,
that felt good.
Blanca.
Oh, yes. Oh, Halloween costume to come.
But there's something about something you said a minute or two ago. Video games are creating a set of structures and dynamics that are open-ended. Like, even in an RPG, when you play The Witcher, the skills that you choose to develop can be different. So each individual gameplay is going to be different. Everyone is taking away a different thing about their character, of how they're choosing to play the game, because it is this sort of open-ended sandbox, to use the term you were talking about before. And so it's not shared, whereas like reading a book, like the Harry Potter books, it is, these are the words in the book. Mm. Everyone read the same words, and maybe there's a different interpretation, but it is linear, whereas these games aren't. And so everyone has, you know, to varying degrees, a different interpretation. And that might be why no one can agree whether a video game movie is good or bad. Also, I think there's just been some shitty, like, bringing up, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme's yes. Street Fighter was like, that was hot trash.
It was real bad.
I have a high tolerance for bad action movies. And when I watched it, I was like, this is not good.
So I did a little research on the IMDb's and the Metacritic's.
IMDb.
Just to make sure that, like, my perception of video game films being shit was true. Just to give you some numbers. The Mortal Kombat, the first one, starring Christopher Lambert of Highlander fame, 5.8 on IMDb. Double Dragon, 3.7. Super Mario Brothers.
I was just thinking of that, and I was like, I remember liking it, but I feel like it was garbage.
Oh, bad. I've done a couple screenings of some of these again, and I might own Mortal Kombat. Armageddon, by the way, the sequel, is much worse. It's really bad. Super Mario, 4 out of 10. Street Fighter, 3.9 out of 10. The only one that, and Warcraft, by the way, because there was a World of Warcraft movie, 32% on Metacritic. Mm. The one that I will give a pass to, the only one, is Tomb Raider. Angelina Jolie, the first
Interesting.
One.
What did you think of the recent one?
Alicia Vikander? Apparently it did better. That got a
6.3. I saw that one. I think
IMDb.
It was better than the Angelina Jolie one. I've seen both.
I told you,
I have a high tolerance for crappy action movies.
But this is also a point about the Tomb Raider franchise, is that it evolved. So it went from, truly during the Angelina Jolie days, it was the original, like, Tomb Raider era. And then there was a recasting of the story starting on Xbox maybe 3 or 4 years ago. It started on Xbox, went to PS4. But they went back to try to craft and give dimension to this character, because in the original games in 1995, it was much more like Babe running around and shooting things.
Yeah,
and in this one, they truly give like a richness to her relationship to her father and why she like goes on these adventures that are so dangerous. And it does the typical, let's give this person a backstory and dimension. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, completely recasting that content for a new generation made sense. And I'm not surprised that the film was better.
Okay. What if the reason to date movies have been really bad at being adapted out of video games is that a lot of video games are made by dudes with female characters that then have a really hard transition or translation into film format, except for now, when in the age of Wonder Woman and other films like it that are giving real stories to the lady heroes, are we basically, could we maybe have a new frontier of awesome games with more interesting characters that could then have a story expanded in movie format?
I have a very strong opinion about this, about one game in particular. I think I've mentioned it before. Horizon. Oh my God, I love Bayonetta so much. Bayonetta is so great. Devil May Cry 5 just came out last week, which was the original series that Bayonetta was a spinoff of. So go see. Horizon Zero Dawn. The story of Aloy in Horizon Zero Dawn and the world that she inhabits, like, it's so timely. I'm not going to spoil anything about it because it's worth buying a PS3 or 4 and playing it. But at PS4, the actual story of this woman, her narrative arc and the moral questions that it poses for society, go far beyond what you might see as just like woman with electronic spear and robot dinosaurs, which is what it looks like. And it is that, but it's incredibly rich and deep, and I love it. And that would, if it were to go to film, I think that there are extensions or spinoffs or things like that that would not only continue building Aloy out as a character because she is really interesting and fun to be a part, like to play with for the whole game. But there's also enough content to spin off and expand the stories of that world.
Yeah, I mean, there are interesting examples, like in Halo, Master Chief is the main character in quotes, but it's really a story about Katana, which is the
Cortana.
There we go. Yes,
Katana's Mortal Kombat. Yeah.
There are some interesting examples, right? Like she is a much more nuanced and complete character than just Master Chief running around shooting stuff and being indestructible or whatever. And even if they do, there's been talks about doing a movie with Halo, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. you know, what it has to be based around other characters because he is not a character.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And I think some of the other games that have tried to do it either worked around a main character that isn't well developed and then used other characters to flesh it out, or they just dive into the rest of the world. Because I'm thinking about Resident Evil. Like, mm-hmm. there were enough Resident Evil movies that were out there, but, like, I can't remember if Mia Jovovich, is it Mia Jovovich?
Mila Jovovich.
That's a Mila Jovovich. If she, she did not play Jill Valentine in the films, I don't believe. This is real bad because we don't have enough information to have this part of the conversation.
No, I think she did. I think she played the main.
Like, I would rather have a movie about Jill Valentine than the other guy.
She portrayed Alice.
Oh, she was Alice. Oh, okay. So then that does make my point. Huzzah! I am retribution.
No, sorry.
I do think that the original characters of Jill Valentine and her counterpart would have been really interesting to see the film like develop around, mm-hmm. but they actually chose a much more complex character within the mythology to build the whole franchise around. And it doesn't hurt that she's awesome and like very cool.
Yeah, the last thing I will say on this is that a lot of this has to do with just like the texture of video games historically. Like when you look at like sort of generations or eras of video games, like mm-hmm. Mario was not like some like rich story. Like it is fundamentally just like an archetype.
That should not ever have been a movie.
And so there's nothing to build it on the back of. But today people are spending so much time on plot and on like story arc and adding nuance to characters. And so in the future it may work. My question though is like, do translations just like you lose things in translation inherently? And by just saying taking something that's great and trying to move it to a new place, you're automatically just losing encoded data. Like you have drift and the core of what made something truly special in one platform and the other. Because I'm thinking about like Spider-Man was a comic, they made it a movie, and a lot of the video games that they historically made were just then movie to video game. And they were, you know, like people have varying opinions and some of them may have had like fun gaming dynamics, but I think some of the breakthrough ones are the newer ones that you've talked about way at the beginning of the series, our podcast series, that are net new stories. And so they're not having to be a translation. So,
yeah. Make new things. Make new things newer. That's the answer.
Videojuegos. Critical Nonsense is a Sylvain Labs production.
Recorded in MacGyver Studios in New York, New York.
We'd like to thank executive producer and Bechdel test proctor, Jess Vander.
Thanks. We'd also like to thank sound engineer Alex Contell for his editing magic.
And his Contelling. Designer Nora Mestrich for continuing to bring the high fives.
Always, every time. And with production help from Sara Gilbert, Les Jacobs, and Tony Vong.
And as always, thanks Alan. We'd like to give special thanks to Aaron.
For sure.
He couldn't be here to give thanks.
Yeah.
But we're thankful for him.
We're thankful for him, and is he thankful for us? Maybe.
Does he even care about the Mario Brothers movie reboot?
Maybe.
Starring John Leguizamo still? I'd like to thank John Leguizamo for everything that he's brought to my life. The Pest, Mario Brothers, his new Broadway show.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. New Broadway show?
Yeah. It's called something.
Even more super.
It's like, I don't want to get it wrong.
Let's not. I'd like to thank Montessori schools everywhere for their hands-on learning methods.
The way you said that just made it extra, like, hands-on learning methods.
Don't you think that's how the first day goes in Montessori schools?
Yeah. I'd like to
welcome, class. Okay.
I'd like to thank ASMR folks for making the internet weirder. Not like, I'm on board. I don't get ASMR, but I'm excited that they're so into it that they're giving permission for the rest of us to be weird.
Or just have interesting ways of speaking.
Yeah. Hi. Hello.
Should we do all the rest of our thanks in this kind of tone?
Yeah.
Okay. Who else do we need to thank?
I'd like to thank Mila Jovovich for the fifth element. Corbin Dallas.
No, that's so scary. I cannot.
You can't do it?
No, I can't.
I don't know that ASMR folks are probably like, no, it doesn't work. Yeah. No, thank you.
Right. On behalf of Aaron, I'd also like to thank the PlayStation 4, which I think of all video game consoles has received over the course of our however many episodes, the most sort of accolades and pitches to go purchase.
Go buy it or don't.
I don't have one. Yeah,
I have a Switch and an Xbox One.
Well, that's it.
You can be different. You can play
video
games. You can
be console-free.
You can walk around with your Switch on an airplane. Thanks, Switch. Thanks for bringing me from my couch. I can be mobile. Video games. Playing.
Okay, bye!
B button, A button, X button, Y
this is
button.
Joey breaking the rules and also malfunctioning.
Fiddly flump.
No.
Flarmadarum.